Tara Wright here. You may have seen me around Top Music, bringing you content, socials, and managing Top Music Marketplace. I just wanted to pop in and invite you to our Plan Your Best Year Challenge. This challenge is taking place January 4th through the 6th. Each day, we will unpack what actually happened in 2022 and how we can use that information moving forward in 2023. We will also give you a homework assignment each day for you to complete and share. And when you do this, you'll get the opportunity to win one of our many amazing prizes. We'll set up a pop-up Facebook group where we will go live each day, and it will give you a place to share your homework, ask questions, and enjoy the cohort group experience. Register at topmusic.co/challenge to sign up for this challenge. I hope to see you there.
You're listening to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music. Tune in weekly as we interview music teachers and experts from around the world to explore creative activities and ideas that build learning connections in students. Our integrated music teaching approach will deepen your students' understanding of musical concepts, engage them in critical thinking, improve their reading and performance, foster their curiosity, and prepare them for a lifetime of music making. Hey teachers, it's Tim Topham here and welcome back to the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast from Top Music Co. Wonderful to be spending some time with you again today. We just love guiding and supporting music teachers just like you to engage, motivate and inspire all your students and run a super sustainable studio business as well. And we're back today with our first ever podcast interviewee, the wonderful Daniel McFarlane from Supersonic's Piano. Someone that probably doesn't need a whole lot of introduction because I know many of you listening to this use lots of Daniel's music or at least have explored it in the past. And I was a huge exponent of Daniel's music when he was getting started. And I used to really enjoy sharing it when I was speaking at conferences. And still today, he is churning out new music and supporting all of his Supersonic's members with an amazing app and on-demand teaching resources, methods, and all sorts. And today, we're discussing how he's been actually building a new method from scratch with the hope that you could learn a little bit more about that process yourself. So Daniel started composing pieces for his own students back in 2006, and since then, he's never looked back. The pieces you'll find on his website, supersonicspiano.com, are the result of many years of in-the-trenches teaching. All his pieces have passed the student approval test. If his own students don't like a piece, then it doesn't get published. And we all know that young children can be the harshest of critics, can't they? In addition to composing, he's also taught students piano, theory, and composition since 1997. Many of these students have gone on to tertiary study and careers in piano performance, composition, music education, and jazz performance. Daniel lives currently in Brisbane with his wife, Melanie, now a doctor, actually, but previously an extremely competitive piano teacher, and their two children and dog. And when he's not in front of the computer or at the piano, Daniel occupies his time chasing after the kids, walking the dog, going for the occasional run, reading, eating, and trying not to melt in the subtropical climate that is the wonderful place of Brisbane. All right, Daniel McFarlane, welcome back to the show. After, 300 episodes later, you're back. It's great to see you.
Well, you've obviously been busy, so that's good to see.
Well, it was, you were actually my first ever guest, March 2015, when it was called the Tim Topham TV podcast. And we talked all about student composition tactics, and you gave us all basically a composition lesson. It was so cool, and a cheat sheet, which I still have today and I still use it. And for anyone listening who haven't checked that out, topmusic.co/episode1 is the place to go and get that. And you can also watch the episode on YouTube because Daniel's actually at his piano and demonstrating things. It was super cool. Lots has happened since then, Daniel, for you and your company and your family and everything. Like so much to catch up on. But before we get into that, I thought it might be fun to do a little week in the life of Daniel McFarlane these days. So everyone will probably know you as the creator of Supersonic's Piano, an incredible composer, but you also still teach and you are a family man as well. So tell us, what does a week kind of look like these days for you?
Well, for me, because school days are obviously school days and there's the mad rush to get the kids out the door. So I generally do mornings with the kids. So we'll get through their piano practice and all the other.
Before school, piano practice.
Yeah, we're trying to get there.
Oh, that's impressive.
Piano practice happening. So piano practice, and I mean, they also play. I mean, we've got one saxophone and drums and some vocals, and yeah, we've got it.
You've got a whole band. You've got two kids?
Three. Just the two kids.
Two kids,
many instruments though. So getting them off to school and then whatever. And afternoons, my wife generally does like the kid run. So I'm still doing some teaching because I love teaching. I don't think I'll ever stop teaching because, I mean, I enjoy it. And also there's the immediacy of when I do something new, I don't have to wait until I get feedback. I can just wander downstairs and if there's an appropriate student that afternoon, then I can go, hey, what do this?
Yeah.
Which is nice. So this is all the new products and everything I do, they go via my students first. Which is, I mean, why I've got to keep, if I'm teaching, I need to have enough students that I have a wide range so that I can have a nice base to experiment on.
So, how many students have you got at the moment, Daniel?
I think it's only 50-something.
Only 50. Now, look, anyone listening to this who knows anything about you, I mean, you are prolific with the music that you create. And you have, I mean, we'll probably dive into it later, but Supersonics has an app and you're updating things and you're bringing out new methods and you're updating those. And how do you do that and be a father of two kids and also teach 50 kids?
Well, I mean, I managed to squash all the kids. The majority of my teaching is Monday to Wednesday afternoon. Then I do Saturday morning and then there's some others sort of around the place. There's some adults during the day and some of my older students who have finished high school and whatever. So, I mean, it's not as intense as it sounds. And also, in terms of teaching, I mean, I don't have to do a huge amount of prep work for the teaching that I do because, I mean, obviously I teach my materials and in terms of teaching for such a long time now that I feel I'm fairly well across what we need to be. And so teaching is, I feel, like that's very enjoyable for me to do and it's not a huge imposition or anything on my day. I look forward to teaching every day and they're a great bunch of kids. But when I was before that, when we had music schools and other teachers and whatever, I think I was up to about 130 odd students. I mean, that's a while ago now. I can't imagine doing that now. I couldn't do it with a family because I do all day Saturday and I start seven to six on a Saturday. And so it was a bit crazy back then, but these days it's I find it quite easy and quite enjoyable, which is what you want to be. Because this is what I think a lot of teachers should be able to get to with their teaching, where you feel that the students are so self-reliant in terms of learning notes and having an input in what they want to play and how they're going to learn it and being self-sufficient with what they're doing at home and whatever, that you come in and don't feel like you're having to climb up that mountain every lesson. You come back and you go, okay, yep, where are we going? Yep, okay, yep, going in the right direction. Wonderful.
I think there's an element there of, I mean, you're well known in the industry and you would be well respected and students and their parents would seek you out probably. What I want to get across is that this is the position that if teachers listening position themselves in the right way and set themselves apart from other teachers, they can have a studio full of students like you who really want to be there and who they really want to teach. It's when you're perhaps just getting started or you haven't really found your feet yet and you're scrounging for any student you can get that you do have that situation where it's like, oh, I've got to teach this student again. And we've all been there at some stage.
Not to say that some of my students aren't challenging because, I mean, some of my students potentially don't even really know that I compose. I mean, they know I compose, but because of what we do, they come across how am I teaching, like my methodology and beyond, but it's not actually covering my repertoire all the time. And other kids, because they just get the book, they don't even really know who the name on the front cover is. And so some of them will go, oh, did you write all these? Oh, there you go. But most of my students all the way through my teaching career have mostly been referrals and word of mouth. And I think that's a good way to build up. And these days, I prefer to take on the more challenging students, the ones that, okay, they want to play the piano, but having this issue, or they're having problems with this, or they don't want to do it because of this. I don't want the easy ones, the ones that I can say, okay, yeah, let's do some work. And that you can see that, oh, yes, I've really done something for this student, because that's for me is the interesting thing. I think that's how it's good for the student as well. You don't want these ones that, I don't know, anyone can teach. I want to feel like we're getting a bit of a challenge.
Yeah. So, do you tend to take quite a few transfer students from other teachers where they haven't quite worked out with other teachers?
Yeah, historically that was my bread and butter. So that's how I got the student numbers up, because if you get a transfer student and you do a good job and the good thing about a transfer student is that a lot of the time, if they're like willingly transferring from the old teacher, they're not coming over because the old teacher retired or did something. If they're coming over, it's generally, I mean, they want to be there. They're looking for, okay, I want to get piano. I want you to show me how I can do what I want to do I'm not currently able to do. So if you do a great job with these transfer students, then everyone's happy. And then I thought they're the ones that you get, oh, such and such said that their kid loves the piano now. So can you take my kid now?
Can you do the same? Yeah.
Yeah. It's the students that you teach from scratch that you do a great job with. They don't know any different. So you come along, and then after how many years of teaching them, they just think, okay, this is how piano teaching is done. They don't know any different. They go, oh, yeah, we've got this lovely piano teacher. They don't, the transfer student ones are usually like, we don't just have this wonderful teacher. We have this awesome piano teacher who took my kid and now they've done this and you have to go to them. So that's why when people say, oh, I can't do transfers, or they'll say, oh, be careful with transfers. But no, just try and work with them. Get it happening, because they'll be your greatest advocates all the way down for years and years. So I still get referrals from students I haven't taught for years. They said, oh, such and such said to come to you.
Okay. I'm the same with you. I've always loved transfer students. And oftentimes you get them in, well, I've had students in such a state that you can't really do any worse than what was currently happening. So it's one of those great positions. You can only go up from where you get these students. I want to pick up one other thing that you said, though, Daniel, which was something to the effect of your job as a transfer student teacher is to help them do the thing that they want to do. And I think this is so important, giving students autonomy, particularly as they get older, age 10 plus particularly, maybe when they're six and just starting, the teacher is doing a lot of the guiding. But after that, we have to give the students autonomy, choice in what they're doing, and help guide them to where they want to go. I'm pretty sure you have that same process
because teaching. There's always, you can only teach the student who's there actually coming for lessons. I don't think there's anything that's so vitally important that you can totally kill their enjoyment of piano for one particular aspect. I think there's always some way around that. There's always a way to go forward. And you may think, okay, well, maybe we should be doing some more of this. I think it's much better to, okay, well, we will do. We'll keep it in the back of your mind. We will do a work on that. But we'll use these other things to move forward, and then we'll start backfilling here and then going sideways across to this. And then while we're going up to this, we'll come backwards and do that. So this is where it becomes as much an art as it is. I'm not sure it really is that much of a science. But certainly these are the things where you need to be able to have that flexibility. And for me, this is why I like having I use my own resources. Because I like to be able to say, okay, let's go here, then there, then over here, and we need to come back and do that. And then we did this, that might lead on to that. How are you feeling about going and doing this? And then again, there's always the solution of, if in doubt, you can just keep on throwing like easy win repertoire at them until you won them over. And nothing gets a bit of motivation happening then. A student having a bunch of repertoire that they can sit down and play happily, and as a bonus, impress people with.
Right, and not have to spend 6 months trying to learn note by note very slowly.
Oh, no. There's a place for that, but but certainly not, yeah.
very much on the same page with all of that. And, I really love how you describe what you describe is a much more segmented but still structured approach, whereas a lot of the traditional teaching is a very linear approach. You do your scales and then you do piece one, two, and three, and then you come back and show me those next week kind of thing. And the whole curriculum is the same because it can be, okay, we're doing grade one this year and then grade two and then grade three and four and five and we just move along this continuum. Whereas you're like, no, we'll do a bit of this and we'll come back to that because we need to and the scales can wait just for a moment. We're going to do some more fun hook music that they're going to love and that'll keep them going and then we'll introduce it. You know, that's the art.
Well, mate, I'd prefer to go backwards. So I'd say, well, if you want to do exams, it doesn't matter that you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 diploma. It matters that you get the diploma at the end. Then you've got to work out, okay, how are we going to get there? So you don't need to go every single grade on the way through to get there. And you certainly, with most of your goals, if you work backwards, you can pretty much work out that, okay, well, it's probably what we're doing now isn't 100% vital. But there is a way around it. We can come back to it. We can do it in a slightly different way. So this is why I resisted for a while actually writing a method, because I figured even if you try and make cater for 80% of like your basic student at a certain age, there's still going to be 20% that's not appropriate for at all. And even within that 80%, there's going to be times you have to go sideways and backwards and reinforce or accelerate. So it all becomes down to, as soon as you put all this on paper, then people assume that that's the way that you think, you say you're going to do it forever, for every student. And for me, it's trying to get across the message that, no, this is what my most idea for how my ideal student can potentially go through this, but it needs to be flexible.
Let's talk a little bit more about your resources, because we're very lucky that you do share all of these compositions with the teachers of the world through Supersonics Piano. And you last, oh, I don't know, three, four, five years, you've brought out a teen or kind of adult method, as you said. You've had a beginner method as well, primer series. Let's talk about all of this and the way you actually approached this. You've touched on some of it, but I reckon there's probably more to it than that.
Yeah. Well, with the main method, so it's all based on, so I've got, well, we'll talk about the primer stuff later because that's a little bit different, but we have, so it goes level 1 through to 5, and 1 takes from a beginner, I would say a primed beginner. So a student that, some basic background skills, but we'll talk about that later. So level 1 is beginner, and then by the time through to level 5, that's or mid intermediate, which is about grade 3 or 4. And for me, it was just as important to have to work out where we're going at the end of it as to where we're starting. Because for my criticism of some methods is that they come from different places, but they all seem to end up at the same spot, which is when you're exam oriented country, they'll be like, hey, there you go, there's your first exam. Our job is done now. We'll stop. And then, or if you're in a country that's not quite exam oriented, they all end. Okay, now we're playing the works by the great masters, a set of pieces. Okay, we need to learn your Baroque and your classical. We need to do this. And I wanted to make it a bit more open ended in terms of the skills that students had at the end. So I wanted them to be able to have played comfortable working, not only in all the keys, but also in working some modes and blues and pentatonic and being able to read a lead sheet and being able to do some arranging accompaniments. And what else have we got there? Work in unusual time signatures. So I put all these things into it that I want at the end. So you go, so if a student had finished all 5 books, they would have this wide ranging set of skills that they could then use. And then I'll pull that back down to, okay, how do we do that from the start? So we need to establish what's good musicality and being able to have a good musical ear and then good technique and all these things. So we built it up from there outwards. And so that was the idea with the method. And that took, because there were some influences along the way, but there were various points where I felt that it was, okay, yeah, this is, it's all me having to work this out, because we're sort of diverging from what other, how other methods would do it. So that was the tricky bit. It's actually the easiest bit was once you hit about grade one, which is sort of late elementary, once you like bridged, got the student to that, then it becomes reasonably easy.
You just because they've got a base level of skills that can then broaden out to a multitude of different areas.
And also hopefully because they can learn pieces efficiently enough that then you can start challenging their ears with all these other things. So I'm also I prefer to delay some of the sounds that they're totally unfamiliar with. For example, some of the classical sounds, they're familiar to you and I and to teachers. However, the students may not be quite as familiar with them.
What kind of sounds do you mean?
As in just like the Baroque, classical, romantic, even these sounds. And to be honest, the little pieces that they write now, particularly a lot of them aren't particularly wonderful. And they were composers teaching pieces back then. I think some of these composers would be horrified. They're saying, "What, you're using my works like this?
It's a repertoire piece.
Good stuff."
Yeah.
So I prefer to make it so to introduce those sounds a little bit below the standard that they're at, and also with very accessible sounds. So, for example, you get to whatever standard you can play your regular pieces at, come in with all the classical music. I call it historical repertoire, just so that they get the idea of, okay, yes, this can be very old music, and yes, I'll need to get my ears sort of tuned into what sounds are there. And so it's always a quick win for that. So you can go, okay, learnt it. Okay, that was easy. We're not hammering them over the head with this repertoire. And so they come in, so this sneaky stream of historical repertoire comes in, and before you know it, they're quite happy playing it rather than putting the vengeance in, you've got to do this big thing here and it's all these new technical skills and you're not getting the sound right. It's got to be lighter.
And it's like putting the vengeance in the bolognese.
Yeah.
as you go.
And stuff like that. So this is how ideas I had with the main method. And for me, I mean, when I teach it, you know, I'm quite happy with how it works. Because because it's very, I find it very easy to work with. And also, I don't feel like I'm having to whack my students over the head with concepts. I think they get introduced quite nicely.
Yes.
So that's
We've got lots of members who've loved your music for years and years and followed you forever and often talk about using your approach. And I think it's great too. I've used it. I remember. Did you call it? What's it called? Is it Blast Off or something?
I originally did Blast Off, which was just because at the time we couldn't actually get books anywhere around the world, and I thought we want to have some hard copies, so to actually get books to people, it was ridiculous. I mean, it is ridiculously expensive to post anything from Australia, so it was only when we did the method books. That's one of the reasons why they ended up being so fat, really. Because we ship from Australia to all Australian orders, or Australian New Zealand orders come from here. But overseas, we have to use a print on demand model. But obviously, it's more expensive than if we had on the ground over there. So this is why I thought, okay, well, if you're going to have to spend all this money on shipping it, you might as well make it worthwhile to get the book to you. And so originally we had Blast Off just because we were having to try to ship these things. And so we had to I needed to fit into 48 pages. So that's why we just called it Blast Off. It's just, okay, let's just get some reading happening. So there wasn't much else happening. Some reading, some technique, not much else. So that's why we did that one.
And how's it looking now? Because you now do most of it on the app, I think, right?
Well, we have all the method, all the books, everything gets going through the app. So if you remember, you can just print whatever you want, use whatever you want. Non-members have access to the free basic material, so all the backing tracks and my teaching videos and the teacher duet and what else, some of the rote pieces and improvisations and stuff like that. So all the basic stuff you need is there, that you don't, it's all just covered. You buy a book, the student gets the book, and then you don't need to log into the app or anything. You just open it up and use the backing tracks and whatever. And you can speed them up and slow it down. So it's, we try and make it so that there's two sets of people that we can cater for, people who just would like to have the books, and then people who like to have it all, which is obviously, that's me. It's not only I like to have, okay, let's just get this. Okay, let's get that. Let's do that. Easy.
Easy flexibility, room, yeah.
No, I teach room. I've got my iPad, but most of the time, if you need something new, I'll just do it straight off my phone. So it's just a wireless over to the printer. Bang, okay, done.
So tell me, is the Primer series something different?
Primer series is different because there's the level one. It comes in, it's notes on the stave straight away, and it sort of assumes a little bit of basic coordination. So, and stuff, and basic prep. I mean, it assumes, if you're Australia, because all kids, well, supposedly, all the kids will have some sort of music education at school. It sort of assumes you've had some sort of basic exposure to some things like this already. So this is, what I wanted to do with the primer is to really take the essence of the word prime. I wanted the students to come from this course primed to do, so that at the end of the three books in the primer series, if I said, okay, I can't teach you anymore, you have to go to another teacher, they went to another teacher and they just walked in and you did some tests on them and said, okay, so see how basically musical and how basically ready they were for piano, you would go, oh, my goodness, this kid is ridiculously ready for piano.
Great, okay.
Because their pitch is wonderful, their rhythm is wonderful, they can do things in time. They have dexterity of, not, I don't like the word strength, but they have the proprioception in their fingers to be able to hold the right positions. They can sit at the piano. So all these things I wanted, so that at the end of the course, the primer course, the student is well and truly primed. And then because I hadn't written anything like that before, I thought all this and all the stuff that I've been taught and researched over the years. So when I was at university, we did Kodai, and that's a big thing in all the schools around here, obviously. And I really like a lot of that, but there's some things I don't think are appropriate for piano. So I took the things I liked out of that. And then I've done some training and a lot of extra reading in Dalcroze. And so I like the strong rhythmic emphasis, and I like a lot of the Dalcroze. But again, there's some things I thought, well, we probably shouldn't do that. So I took the best things I liked out of that. And then I've always read some Gordon and stuff like that, and the stuff I like about that as well. And then in terms of piano technique, I like the whole arm approach to starting off. So I wanted to do something like that. So putting all these things together, and then I thought, okay, well, there's nothing really like that. So you're just going to, there's nothing, no, well, it's good, because had I found something exactly the way I wanted, I wouldn't have bothered. I would have just said, okay, just go use that. But as I did it, I couldn't find exactly what I wanted. So what I came up with is, I wanted to use solfège. I wanted do, re, mi, so I wanted a pentatonic to start off with, just because I want, it's so much, it's easier to sing, and it's great for switching your ears on. So, and the good thing about it is, if you start with So and Me, which is in G and E for my primer, with both hands, you go on, the first piece you play is a two-handed piece with your strongest fingers. So if you're ever going to set yourself up for having a chance of having a good technique, that's how you'd like to start it. So, and also, you don't want to be there trying to sing G, E, G, E. Well, and also because it's a bit confusing, because all the sounds G, E, D, C, they all end with E. They're not, but So and Me are very different sounds, are very easy to sing, and they're very easy to keep organized in your mind. So this is why I wanted to do it. But then, so we start with So and Me, and then we add La, we go down to Re, we do Do, and we do a lot of body using your body's instrument as well. So obviously, if you're listening to this, you can't see it, but when I get the kids to prepare for their songs and we sing in there on the carpet, sitting down singing, la, they stick their hands up in the air, so they touch their head. Me is on their shoulders, raise on their tummy, and then doze down on their lap. So they're doing all this, getting a sense of where the notes are in space. And then when you go into the instrument, they start off, they only end up because so la, G and A are your two strongest fingers on your right hand, and do, re, and mi are your strongest fingers on the left hand. You don't need to worry about what your thumb's doing or your pinky. And yeah, so if we go like that, the first book starts off a version of pre-stave. So we just have little boxes where you put a dot where the note is. And the one thing I didn't like about Kodai is that I don't think tars and tt's, so quavers, I mean, crotches and quavers, or what's the
quarter and eighth notes?
Quarter and eighth notes are all that wonderful for young pianists because it's just too fast. So because you should be doing that slightly slower movement if you want to try to encourage that whole arm technique. So my way around this is you just have either play or rest. So for whole three books, there's only play a note or rest. So you don't have to hold any long notes. You don't have to subdivide the beat or anything like that. So it's either play or don't play. So which is very easy to stick with the beat. And so they start off like that. So there's a little, and it's very easy to dictate as well. Students write their own pieces quite easily. And all you have to do is write a piece, put a little dot in the box. So la, so me, put it on your body, sing it. Drew it away from the instrument, jump on the instrument, play it, sing it, done.
Sounds great, yeah.
And so the first book we have this We also have a memory stream, which in the first book starts with simple nursery rhymes and body games, doing right and left, so I have to memorize little things each week. The second book that moves into simple rote pieces, and then the third book it moves into more advanced rote pieces. So they're getting the stream of organizing their pieces, or organizing sounds within their head. We also have finger tap things, which drill your finger numbers and along with coordination. So even though we don't play with your thumb and or pinky on the instrument, we certainly do work away from the instrument. So when you come to play it, you're well and truly ready to go. On the second book, we're on the stave and we do the same set of notes. And again, much better. The third book, we just introduced some simple articulation, some two-note slurs and some staccato, and that's pretty much it. And by the end of it, I was actually amazed when I started testing it out that there's one girl in particular I remember, her mum is a singer, and she came for lessons saying, look, She walked in the door apologizing, saying, look, I'm a singer, but I'm pretty sure that my kid is tone deaf.
Okay.
Like, they can't sing. I'm like, really? And by the end of the first book, she was singing in tune and singing and playing in tune. I'm like, yes, she can do it. And the mum's like, I didn't think she'd do it. But I didn't think she did it for the first few weeks. I didn't think she'd do it either. But then she can do it.
She got there, yeah.
Yeah, so all these kids now who are coming from the primer, they have, because we've done this work, they will sit at the instrument play with one great technique and play these little pieces in time because I never used the backing tracks. I've never had so much a workout with these little ones. And it's great. And it's even easy. We hit the level one book next after that, and I'll go, okay, well, this kid's practically teaching himself already, which is a 101. And even if you don't like my regular one through to five, if you prefer another approach, I certainly think the primer would be a good introduction, just because, I mean, the results you get from it, whatever you go afterwards, the little kids, and you would just go, it's probably one of more proud of, because I mean, it took a lot of research, it took a lot of playing, experimenting to get it right, and yeah, now I'm super happy with the results of that. Unfortunately, because if you only take elements of this and elements of that, then I can't really say it's a certain, you can't go, it's Kodai or it's Dalcroze or it's Gordon. It's a bit of this, a bit of that, a bit of that, which then it's probably silly from a marketing's perspective for me, obviously, because now I've got to explain to people. But I mean, this is what I think is 100% the best that I could do for this. Totally coming off a clean slate, going in and working it out.
Yeah, and asking yourself, what is the best approach, in your opinion, to get there? I actually think it is. I think it's good marketing because you've taken the best of multiple approaches. I love that there's singing, that there's movement, that there's composing from the start. That mix of approaches, yeah, actually strengthens what you're doing because you're not down one single track. And that's, I remember that's much, it's quite a similar story to what the Piano Safari people did by observing like what are lots and lots of people do. What are the best elements of what everyone's done? And that's, you know, really similar to what you've done as well. I think the addition of backing tracks is always great. And yeah, just reiterating the singing. If you can get kids singing from the start, you don't get that situation where you try and get them singing for an oral test or an exam or something like that 3 years later and it's the first time they've ever done it. Of course, they're going to be shy and awkward and maybe not very good at it. If we can get that from the start, it's so much better.
If you sort of hide the singing, it's you don't want to put a spotlight on kids, especially when they walk in their first lesson and go, okay, sing.
Correct.
So, but we'll sit on the floor and say, okay, here's so, put your hands on your head and sing so, and then so put your hands so, and because it's always, it's singing and something. It's okay.
Yes, this okay. Is what yeah, yeah.
Put your hands on your head
and you're sing. Doing it as well.
Yeah. And I always put it after. So it's not like sing and do this. Okay. Where so is, put your hands on your head and sing so. And so, and then put hands. And then, so there's always something that's they going, that they're having to work. It's not the main emphasis. It's just, I say, okay, we're just seeing to just reinforce to know, so you can tell me what you're doing.
It's great to hear too, that you've tested it on multiple students as well. I know some people listening would be like, oh, but I mean, this sounds great, but has he actually tested this?
There was the first lot where our friends up the road actually sent their one of their girls down, and we started off when it was just started, literally just me scribbling things on paper each week before the lesson. Okay, how'd it go? Okay, yep, let's try this, I'll try that. So they're lucky, they got a year's worth, I said, of free lessons. So when I did, I said, I don't feel your friends, I won't charge you for this. This is my product research. And then I started, I probably had about a dozen. Which I mean, it'd be nice to get. Wouldn't I see it? Loads and loads more. But I think there's a fairly wide spread of the kids I want.
And what's what age are you marketing this at for teachers?
Well, this will be anywhere four and above, because it is appropriate for 4 to 6, maybe extending to 7 as well. So you know, with your books as well, you don't have to do all three. So you can either do the first book, and if you go, okay, yeah, they're primed, inverted commas, they're good, then you can go off and do something else. Or you can do the first two books. So you can either, you can go 1, 2, 3, you can do 1, 2, you can do 1, 3, you can do 2, 3.
Got it. Okay.
So there's all the ways. So they all fit like that. So I didn't want to make it so you're locked in to feel like you have to plod your way through. They go, oh, really, they're two. They don't really need to do this anymore. So you can go in, and the idea is, yes, as soon as you feel that they're switched on and things are working well, then you can move on. Because, I mean, also, it was with a 4- and 5-year-old, you also got to really think about what's going to happen next. So if you go racing through, and then it's no point racing through if you're just going to hit a brick wall at the next sort of next level. So it's about a book a term. So most of my 5- and 6-year-olds, they're the sort of, I had one, a few 4-year-olds, mostly 5 and 6. They did about a book a term.
Okay. And a term over in Australia is about 10 weeks.
It's designed to run about 8 to 10 weeks.
That's great. Now, changing gears a little bit, I think you've got some tips on mid to late elementary, which is, there's often a bit of a gulf or, you've got to change gears, as we were saying before, around that preliminary to grade one level. Some quick thoughts on that?
Yeah, so this is, so if you're not in the, so that's sort of mid-elementary to late elementary, my way of thinking. So it's when you're moving from shorter pieces. Pieces are getting slightly longer, and also they're going away from, you know, there's always these sort of mid-elementary prelim pieces always feel they're in a sort of safe zone. Like you may be in a sort of rounder set of notes that you're quite familiar with. And if you're moving to a new spot, you do it like in a direct manner, like jumping to the next spot and then you're moving, playing like that. So this is, in terms of teaching philosophy and my methodology, though, when you hit this sort of level, when you're trying to go from that mid to late elementary, this is where you sort of need to change gears from it being a linear progression to one that starts to jump around a bit, becomes a bit more jagged. So this is often kids smack into that brick wall. And I think some of the mistakes that made around this level is that you just keep trying to give them repertoire at the same level, which is always that is the struggle because you have new things, a new set of notes that are not quite as familiar and don't have as many signpost notes to or landmark notes to anchor themselves to. And trickier rhythms, trickier key signatures, trickier this. And then it feels like all the time that you're having to bash it.
It's a struggle.
This wall. Yeah. So, and I've always said, okay, this is the time, this is the tricky time, and this is where you need to do a giant bubble of repertoire. Like this is sort of hit the pause. So you pause there and then start throwing off harder pieces. So out of every four pieces, maybe one of them is a harder one. So I call it explain to the students. So we have moving to high intensity, low intensity. So they know, and also go, okay, this is going to be our intense piece. And so they go, okay, yeah, cool with that. But we're going to match it up with these other ones that learn at the same time. And yep, okay. And so they feel like they're part of the process as well. So what that boils down for me is that I need a whole heap of repertoire that we can use at this level that while they're essentially to create the volume, not as in volume lands, as in the pure number of pieces that we need to learn while we're waiting for the, because each time we go to a harder piece, it'll be a little bit easier. And then eventually suddenly we'll give them the new piece and I'll just go bang and go, okay, yep, we're good. And we're on now. But while we're waiting for that, we've got to do all these huge volume pieces. So what I've been doing lately is starting to organize, do more themed works around this level. And so then I can start putting some of the sneaky little things in as well.
So what do you mean by themed? In what way?
As in, so I did a set of pieces called Dark Sun because, you know, epic. You go back to that first composition thing, we talk about some of the little tricks to make an epic sounding piece. You know, just throw everything at them. And so this is bang, these are all epic. So Dark Sun is, you know, you're in starships, like battling around this dark sun. So we've got pieces called Antirius and Goliath. And so these epic, like giant big bass repetition of these themes, jumping around the place. But then I thought, okay, while we do this and make it so that there are about six pieces in each, make it so we have some sneaky things in there. So I'll put in a slightly sneaky time signature, a sneaky little, so they go, oh, that's different. But it's still in the same sort of vein as these other ones, like, oh, so that's cool. So I'm sneaking in, so 6-8 and 5-4 and 3-8 and then a bit of some Phrygian dominant and a little bit. So I did the Dark Sun and then I did another set called Bass Boss Battle, which is all reading in bass clef. I did it in two places, so there's a lower set so you can practice reading down to the ledger lines off the bottom, and then another set which up a little bit higher. And again, it's got some sneaky stuff stuck into that while it's all the epic stuff, while we've got these epic sounds going. And then now I've just recently gone up the top of the instrument and I've done a new set of pieces called Celestial Sounds. So these are, if you think, I don't know, sort of those spacey sounds of like Hans Zimmer or whatever, up the top of the instrument. So I'm sort of expanding out. So I have these whole sets of themed pieces because I think it's tricky for some teachers. If you're, I like to mix and match all the time. It can be a little bit draining to have to mix and match all the time. But so instead, you can pick up this set of pieces and go, okay, well now, bang! I've got six pieces that we're going to like that are all at the same level. But you know what? We also get to do this. We do this. We're doing some. There's variety within that, so you can pick it up. Yeah, so okay, yeah. do these bass pieces. Do these other set of pieces here. Oh, now we're moving up to the top of the treble and do some pieces up there. And then next, I've got a tower challenge plan next, which is moving up the stave.
And so the goal of all of this is it's been called repertoire-rich learning. So instead of just a few pieces a year that are really hard and take forever, we mix that up. We have a few of those, but at the same time, we build their skills with easier pieces that they can achieve then and now, and also ones that are really, they sound great, but as you're saying, they sprinkle in some of the challenges that they're going to come up in these other pieces.
I just wanted to make it not just a feeling of, I'll take some of the guesswork out of putting these pieces together, because you know if you play these set of pieces, you're going to get, well, the kids are going to be happy because it sounds pretty epic. But you're going to be happy as well because you have all these extra little things that is sprinkled throughout them. Then you go, hey, we've ticked off this. So I've always called it, yeah, that high-low intensity. And then the way I break it up, it's the high-intensity pieces. They're the ones where I explain to the students that, look, it's not just purely about your enjoyment. This is where you take into consideration external things as well. So like your exam pieces, your concert pieces, whatever. So you not only have to get these pieces to a level that you're happy with, but you need to take in consideration other people's perspective and views on how you play the piece. So if you do little pieces like that all the time, it can be pretty disheartening.
That's right, yeah, because you're forever just kind of hanging on at the level of your technical ability as well. That's why the exam express can be such a challenging thing to be on. And that's why we encourage people to mix things up as much as possible.
So that's my rule for the high intensity. And then going down low intensity, my only rule is that, the students must either choose it or at least go, yeah, I want to play that. And then it can't take more than about 1 to 3 weeks to learn.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, so that's right. So this is how I split it up for them. And then, some like sort of go, like there's a little bit of gray area because some of the pieces go at the end of the, when we learn it to accept, we'll stand it off and go, okay, what do you want to do with this piece? And sometimes, okay, well, I had enough. Yep, that's fine. Okay, you know what? I really like this piece. So, okay, well, now let's use that then. So what can we do? Do you want to memorize it? Do we want to work out to do more of an in-depth analysis than what we've done with it? We'll work out exactly what makes it tick, and then you can try and create your own piece like that. Let's use it as a jumping off point.
Yeah, using repertoire as a springboard for creative activities. That's my jam. I love it.
That's what I've been doing lately. So filling up. I mean, I don't think, certainly don't think there's my current output is lacking.
I was going to say, I don't think there's a shortage of Supersonics piano music, Daniel.
No, but I wanted to do some more themed ones.
Okay. That's great. I'm conscious of our time. We're going to have to wrap things up in just a minute. So for people who are already members of yours, would they be able to access that as part of their package, those new?
Yeah, everything.
Yep.
Everything goes through the app. So there's rarely a week that there's not something new going in.
It's quite, as I say, it's just remarkable how prolific you are. And the music is also good. I've taught your music since I first started blogging and speaking way back when you were just beginning, 2011-ish, I reckon, you started trying to make a name for Supersonics. You've done an incredible job over that period. And I've taught so much of your music and the kids just resonate with it. It's something about the harmonics and the rhythms and the patterns. It's just always been brilliant. So I do encourage teachers, if you haven't checked out Daniel's music, then do explore it. Where should people go, Daniel, to find out more about you and your music?
We have our regular site, our shopping site is just supersonicspiano.com. And then our content hub is the app, which functions as not only a web app, but it also has dedicated apps for your iPad, iPhone, and Android is supersonicsplus.com. So if you, supersonicsplus.com does feature samples all the way through. So if you can go through and explore there and click on the samples and have a look. But the more comprehensive samples and explanations of things are over on the main website.
Great. You've also got a Facebook group. Is that just for members or for anyone interested in your music?
Anyone can join that one. That's been around for a while now.
Yeah, that's great. I do see messages popping up every now and then in my feed. Great place to keep connected with you and all that you're doing.
And the Facebook page as well. It's all Supersonics Piano. You search for all that across all the socials, depending on my mood, how prolific we are on various social channels. Always working to put stuff in, not necessarily always working to marketing and publicize it.
Well, if this can help, then get some teachers to check it out who might not have been familiar with you, then I'll be only too pleased. It's been great, as I say, in my studio, and lots of our members use your music. So thank you for all that you create, and thanks for coming on the show again today. After 300 episodes later, it's been great to reconnect with you.
Thanks.
Well, that's the end of the show for this week. Next week on the podcast, we're covering a topic that I really don't know why I haven't covered in the previous 300 episodes, because it's something that's come up all the time. You see it at conferences. I've experienced lectures on it and workshops. And there's a bit of buzz about it now. And what I'm talking about is, of course, the narrow key piano crusade, we might call it. And next week, I'm going to be interviewing two of the main sort of leaders of this in America and also Australia, Linda Gould and Rhonda Boyle, who have been really working incredibly hard to get information out there about narrower keys for piano keyboards to suit smaller hand shapes. So if this is something that you've been interested in, then make sure you tune in next week. We're going to dive into where the actual process of getting narrow keyboards is at, a little bit of the history and what's in store for us in the future, including some of the very first digital pianos featuring narrow keys, which is pretty cool. So I'm Tim Topham, and I can't wait to speak to you again next week. Bye-bye, everyone. Have a great weekend. How do you keep up to date with all the latest trends and research into music education? How do you connect with other teachers around the world and make sure your teaching stays fresh and relevant for students of all ages and stages, both now and into the future? I created our Top Music Pro membership to be the one-stop shop for music teaching resources, training, support, and community, and I'd love for you to come and join us inside. With over 40 comprehensive training courses, hundreds of teaching demonstrations and lesson plans, free monthly sheet music, discounts, and all the business and pedagogy support you could ever need, Top Music Pro is the community you've been looking for. If you're ready to level up your learning from the podcast and join thousands of other teachers in our global network, head over to topmusicpro.com today. If you enjoy this show and want to hear more of our work, be sure to subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening today. For links and resources mentioned in this episode, visit us at topmusic.co/podcast or check out the show notes. I'm Tim Topham, and this is the Integrated Music Teaching Podcast, a production of Top Music. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy your week ahead, and I'll catch you next time.